Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Michael Morris. I do apologize to viewers watching on YouTube. If you see us both sweating profusely, it is rather hot in Cape Town, but we will do our best to soldier on nonetheless. Our first story for today is, in the grand scheme of things, a very small story, but the symbolism is quite spectacular. The Gauteng provincial government has issued a furious, angry statement after a sign of people to the G20 in Gauteng was vandalized. The sign was knocked over, it seems, at night. Big red X's were drawn all over it. Various swear words. The F the G20 was written all over it. The word jobs with multiple question marks after it was written on this vandalized sign. And sort of the whole thing was just toppled over and crossed out and read in this kind of furious thing. In its statement about this, the Gauteng government said that this was the work of armed assailants, that streetlights as well as traffic signals had been damaged, and that this act represented, quote, a direct assault on our nation and its standing in the world. This is not petty crime, but a deliberate and malicious campaign of sabotage designed to undermine and tarnish the image of our province and our country as we prepare to welcome global leaders to the G20. These are inexcusable, vindictive actions are aligned and designed to consolidate the work of smear merchants who are promoting outlandish conspiracy theories and a certain negative narrative about our country. The statement also said that this was deliberate destruction of essential infrastructure and that that was a crime which had a jail time of up to 30 years and that the provincial government would, quote, respond accordingly. We are aware that some roguish elements are mobilizing to cause chaos and we are working in full cooperation with all national security structures. We have dedicated our law enforcement agencies to conduct a thorough investigation. We'll identify, apprehend, and fully prosecute the perpetrators of the sabotage. Extent of the law, said Panyaza Lesufi, insisting that Gauteng was ready, capable, and proud to host the G20. You know, Michael, if the worst terrorists are going to do is knock over a sign and spray paint jobs question mark on it, you know, I think that's perhaps not the highest priority on government's radar, and yet. What that statement from the Gauteng government reveals is the most incredible insecurity I think I have ever seen in a government institution ever before. If you're going to release something like this after, you know, a social media virality of a vandalized sign, I mean, come on.
It is the most extraordinary thing. I'm reminded of, so many statements, I think, in the 70s and 80s, when the government at the time was blaming international media for giving South Africa a bad name, when it was very clear that it was actually the policies here that were devastating our reputation and turning us into a pariah. And unfortunately, this is exactly the condition we're in today. That all the words sort of scrawled over this thing. Well, it's jobs and the F word, pretty much. Another one that I can't quite make out. But clearly expressing extreme irritation at all the effort that's going into beautifying the route that the G20 arrivees are going to be taken from the airport to their swanky hotels and their conference venues and so on. And all the rest of the city is crying out for renovation and maintenance and care. And civil servants who are doing their jobs and so on. So I think it's an expression of popular and very, very widespread utter disdain for the whole jamboree that's being put on for these few world leaders just for a short time. People can see right through that. They're not interested. And I think it's a very healthy thing, quite frankly, that people are willing to register their objection in this way. Destructive though some of it might be, I'm not a fan of burning things down and breaking things down. But I think it's a very healthy thing if a society is conscious of the maltreatment that it gets from the people it elects. And that, unfortunately, is the condition that we are familiar with. So, yeah, I mean, the symbolism is just too acute for words. And the question is, who is actually tarnishing our reputation? It's not these urban terrorists, so called, and that's really the point.
But it's kind of actually incredible when you just sort of step back and look at this. The Gauteng government is essentially claiming that an organized terrorist group is carrying out a mass campaign of sabotage targeting all kinds of municipal infrastructure across the province in order specifically to undermine the country. And yet they don't say who these people are in the statement. They sort of imply, I don't know, that line about conspiracy theories. Are they saying that this is what, AfriForum or something doing it? I mean, it's just pathetic. Like, if you have, this is a very serious allegation, and you need to actually back it up with some very serious evidence that there is some sort of mass thing, or else it's revealed for what it is, which is a really hysterical attempt to just shove away blame for not just, say, oh, well, they're vandalizing a sign. What are we going to say that next time the traffic lights are out, is it going to be these nefarious elements again? That seems to be what the statement is suggesting. In which case, this is, the top level of national, obviously we're under a terrorist attack, the scale of which we can barely comprehend. I mean, look at how damaged the infrastructure is. I think it represents the fact that Lesufi's government really has no answers. And I just think back to all of the sort of the sound and the fury that Lesufi often likes to approach politics with, and, fairly successfully. I think he does have a quite dedicated following from some people. He's good at social media. He speaks aggressively on topics. But when it comes to actual service delivery, it's kind of amazing that his government appears to have no sort of answer. I remember that really great piece, I think we talked about it last year sometime, of the Gauteng government attempting to host a local government discussion in Darbo or something like that, and how most of the municipalities in the province didn't even send their mayors, even though it was supposed to be a high-level thing, and then the agenda was all messed up, and the power went out at one bit, and it was just a complete disaster. And that, for me, was sort of symbolic of the Gauteng government, that it is full of sound and fury, but it signifies very little.
Exactly. And the overriding impression one gets is that there's just this bland denial of popular resentment. It's as if there's no appreciation of just of the scale of resentment in the population. Nobody needs to organize nefarious activities to trigger the popular feeling from people who are really just at the end of their tether. They've had enough. And the sight, of the beautification and the fixing up of things along the route, I forget the names of the roads now in Johannesburg where the grandees are going to be arriving. It actually just inflames that feeling, the feeling of abuse, of being abused, of being overlooked. People who, for whatever the thing might be, trying to get in touch with the officialdom to sort out some problem, they're put off. There's an answering machine, or nobody answers, or nothing happens for days and then weeks and then months. There's no water. There's no power. One thing after the next. Holes are dug in the road and they're never filled in. It's very ordinary, very simple stuff. And it's just, it expresses the utter contempt of people in power. And popular resentment is a reaction. Unfortunately, the government is going to have to recognize this. It occurs with street signs, and it's going to happen at the ballot box.
I think the larger, the deeper point from all of this is, Lesufi is part of this faction of the ANC that seems to want to go into coalition with the EFF and MK, and then I don't know. I guess the assumption is that all of the MK votes would immediately swing back to the ANC, it will achieve a majority, and then all this, its current position of weakness will be like some sort of bad nightmare. But as polling shows, and as just sort of the general attitude in the country, you can see in the, everything from the media to the ordinary person on the street, the dissatisfaction with this grows. And, you know, this is not a great offering if you are kind of one of the new up-and-coming forces of rejuvenation, the ANC, which I think is what Lesufi may view himself as, you know, maybe a future leader of the party. Like, your offering is one of failure. Your legacy is one of failure in terms of governments. And I think, you know, that kind of suggests that if the ANC chooses that route, I mean, I think it's already in trouble, but if it chooses that route, it's only, you know, sort of signing its death warrant. It may not come in 2029, but it will definitely be sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
okay. Good. Any final thoughts?
No, I mean, I think it will ultimately come down to the political fate of organizations. You can put it off for so long, and then suddenly it confronts you, it hits you in the face. We've seen this before. Yes. Mighty, mighty political parties have just collapsed to nothing. That's what happens if you don't pay attention.
Ooh. All right. Speaking of paying attention, Jonathan Oppenheimer has been talking about South Africa being too timid about its economic growth targets. I believe he was putting out statements last week, which we discussed on the show, about cutting regulations for small business, this being a major way to actually make the lives of people better in the country, to see the economy booming. Oppenheimer has said that I believe South Africa should be targeting 8 to 14% growth, and that 10% we could do in our sleep if constraints were removed. The government's current target, as Oppenheimer points out, is only 3% economic growth over the next couple of years. This year, we're expected to only achieve 1% or less, which is, you know, hardly growth at all when our population is also growing. This growth target is supposed to achieve sort of, I think it's by 2029, 3%. And this is based off of the very limited reforms in Operation Vulindlela, which are to do with logistics and electricity and all that, which, you know, there is some sign that some of those might actually be beginning to have a positive effect. And there have been some, you know, limited good moves out of government. But 3% is not going to actually solve unemployment or poverty in this country anytime soon. And it's not going to, you know, frustrate their sort of rising expectations of the majority of South Africans. So I think Oppenheimer is completely right, at least in saying that we're being far too timid in our growth strategy. Although, you know, there is something of a kind of, it's being a little bit overzealous. I mean, a 14% growth rate, 10% in our sleep. If it were so easy, everyone would do it. I think 8% is a really good target, an ambitious target, but one that we could get to with the right choices. But I don't know. 14% seems a bit high. I don't know, Michael, what do you take on all of this?
I mean, I'm always a little hesitant to say anything about economics because I understand so little about it. But this is why I think what he is saying is actually important. I think he does. I do agree with you. The 8 to 14, or the upper end of that range, seems a little bit fanciful, but his very next comment, I think, you know, strikes me as important. He says 3% presumes that everything stays the same, all the constraints that exist today remain, and his question then is why do those constraints have to exist? And I think that's a really important question. I'd like him to go further and just actually set this out. He said these things in public. I think that's very important. We need top business people to say sensible things and to also to lift the sort of lid on what these I often feel self-imposed limitations that we're so fond of in South Africa. We always think, well, we can't do that, instead of thinking that we can. And I think here's somebody who clearly is thinking in the latter sort of realm of sentiment. It's a can-do, seems to be a can-do approach. 10% we could do in our sleep. That sounds like a lot, as you say. But 3%, that clearly is far too accepting of constraints. But I'd be very interested to hear from him in more detail about, you know, what can we really do? What can the GNU do? What can businesses do? What, and put pressure on NEDLAC and put pressure on the Vulindlela partners and put pressure on the rest of society to say, to tell us, the public, people like me who don't really understand a great deal of economics, to explain to us why you aren't doing these things. Why are we sticking with constraints and exactly what those constraints are for? Are they serving any purpose? I think very, very interesting. I would just like to encourage him to keep going and just get more and get down to the detail.
I think the other thing that's kind of missing here is, and as I sort of alluded to in his comment about, you know, 3% the constraints remain the same and it's too timid. But we are in a sort of social and economic crisis of incredible proportions, right? We have essentially not recovered from the global financial crisis of 2008, if you look at our kind of economic trajectory. And, you know, we've had 15 years of essentially just kind of lost time. And during that time, we've seen sort of almost every measure of our country go backwards in some ways. Everything from, you know, crime to infrastructure to jobs. And this is why these things can't be delayed. 3% is not good enough because, you know, even though that's definitely in the right direction and much better than what we're getting now, it is still means that millions of people will be left to languish without opportunities, without hope, without the potential to have happy, successful lives for generations to come. Every year that we don't get that 7% economic growth, that is consigning more human potential to essentially the bonfire. And that is the great sort of crime of our current situation. And, you know, I wonder whether, unless there is major reform, whether we will even reach that 3% growth. You know, economists make these predictions and they have data and things to back it up, but you know, we've seen a lot of optimism come out of government plans before, and they have historically been misfunded. So I think this is just another wake-up call for government that this cannot go on any longer.
Yeah, I think it is a big worry. You know, one of our contributing writers, Sean Hagedorn, often writes about the every year the tens of thousands who are added to the sum of people who don't have jobs and are likely not going to have jobs. And that eventually this body risks becoming a permanently unemployable or unemployed cohort of society. That really is the consequence of all this. I was just thinking while you were chatting years ago, Tony Leon once remarking that America's success in economically can be taken down to two very simple words: you're fired. I suppose it's three words, but anyway, you are fired. Well, you're fired. But it's because the easier it is to do that, the easier it is to hire people. And it's, you know, to people in South Africa, this sounds like a terrible risk. You know, we want to have our protections. We want employers to find it very, very difficult to fire us because, you know, that'll make us vulnerable, kind of thing. You know, it's a kind of natural response, but it's a failure to appreciate that risk, providing the opportunity in a society or in an economy for people to take risks is actually the very source of success of the dynamism that begins to occur. That if you can be fired just like that, it's very likely that you can be hired just like that too. And it's a complete absence of this unwanted interference and unwanted mess that gets in the way of just trying to be our best selves. That's really what all success is. But it does. There's an element of risk in it, and it requires taking a plunge. And that appears to be what he's saying. You know, remove all the kind of red tape and all the ridiculous stuff that stands in the way of people just trying their best to succeed and being free to be able to do so. That's where I think his 10% in our sleep comes from. we can't even picture it because there's so many things in the way of thinking like that. You know,
I was thinking, as I do, because I don't have a life, about the European Union and why it continues to see this kind of ridiculously, this ridiculously weak growth. I mean, I'm generalizing. You know, countries like Poland and is got a growing healthy economy, but I think it's because they have kind of really kind of culturally embraced that sort of anti-risk taking attitude. Mm. Now, when you're a wealthy country with, these kind of vast social safety nets and years of growth and strong institutional stability and stuff, you can kind of get away with it. It's not great. And they're running, I think, into problems now in Europe because they've been too risk averse. But, this is that's something you can still live with. In South Africa, we can't afford that because we don't have that fat, so to speak, to live off of. And that's exactly why we need to be a bit more risk-takey in so many ways. Okay, let's move on to our next story, our last one for today. And you know what? This one is just a kind of a personal obsession of mine because it represents for me how much our government still has this kind of almost authoritarian, top-down, collectivist approach that, I think the South African state has existed with since 1910, when South Africa was formed, of just sort of, not prioritizing the individual. And I'm talking here about load reduction. So if you are listening, you may not know what load reduction is. Load reduction is carried out in many parts of the country where Eskom believes that there is a way too many illegal connections or whether there are significant infrastructure restraints. These are by and large poorer areas of the country where essentially Eskom is still running load shedding of a type. You lose power usually between sort of 5 and 7 or somewhere around there in the morning, and then also the same time at night. And this is not a small thing too. An estimated 8.5 million people are affected by load reduction. Now you might be listening to that and say, well, if people are stealing electricity in an area, then it only makes sense that Eskom should treat them more harshly. After all, they are stealing stuff. And, I think there's a very fair point there. If you don't pay for electricity that you're using, you should be punished for that. However, the way that Eskom does it is extremely sort of ham-fisted, heavy-handed, with entire areas being cut off, not individual customers, which means that, if you are someone with a prepaid meter who has to pay your electricity bill to get it, you still get hit load reduction as well, even though you are a law-abiding citizen. And that only seems to kind of enhance the sort of general cynicism and, lack of caring, I think, in so many places. There's a lot of discussion about how many people, Soweto, for example, haven't, they owe this huge debt to Eskom, and then, this has never really been paid, and then there are people who don't want to pay for electricity, and that's an issue. But you only make those problems worse when you don't give people really a reason to trust you, when you don't create incentives to pay. Now, this Daily Maverick story has an interview with a couple of people in Soweto. Nosiwe Nobanda from Dobsonville said, some paying customers who are on prepaid like my family are cut off while others are left untouched. It does not make sense that prepaid customers who pay for their power are also being subjected to load reduction. What are we being punished for? Because we now use a prepaid meter and pay for electricity. Also interviewed in the story, interestingly, was an older man, 77-year-old Albert Matlango, who said that what tears me apart is all these things are not properly explained to us as residents. As far as I'm concerned, I'm still battling load shedding, because load reduction, load shedding, what's the difference? They all deliver unbearable blackouts. We want flat electricity rate for old people and those who cannot afford it. We are tired of this load reduction because there's nothing that you can do in your house without electricity. Michael, what's your take on this one? I mean, Eskom says that it wants to end this all by, I think, 2027. I'll believe it when I see it. And one of the things is rolling out prepaid meters and stuff, which I think is a good initiative. The whole billing system to me has always seemed a little bit weird. But, I think this kind of collective punishment approach is really some of the worst about the way government so often runs in this country.
Yeah, I mean, there was that phrase you used in our pre-show chat, that this entrenches cynicism, and you repeated in a slightly different form a moment ago. I think that's very important. It's not something we can afford. We can't. We need people to feel that they have a stake, that they're being reasonably governed, that if they are paying, they get what they're paying for. And clearly, this isn't happening. I mean, that's a travesty, actually. Likely people who are not necessarily among the wealthiest in the country, they already have so many other things to worry about, to battle with, and clearly they've and completely understandably they're finding it unbearable, and so it does indeed entrench cynicism at the very moment where the reverse is what we want. We want people to feel rewarded for doing the right thing, for paying for electricity, and just to feel that they're being justly treated as citizens. It's such a fundamental thing. Whereas this is completely indiscriminate. I think one or two of them said that they preferred actually to have load shedding because at least that was predictable. Whereas now, they have this completely indiscriminate, unpredictable situation. So I think it is shocking and symptomatic in a way of all the other things we've been talking about as we almost every show, I suppose, that it comes down to the nitty-gritty of how, ordinary things are done, ordinary governance, ordinary provision of services, people doing their jobs, accountability. That's how society gets things right. You just And society will make sure that those who aren't getting it right will be punished. I mean, we've been saying this. I think 10 years ago, the ANC could have laughed or did laugh at us that when we said history will punish you, history never lets anyone off the hook. 10 years ago, I think they would have laughed and probably did laugh at us. Whereas today, it's not so funny because I think it's approaching. They themselves can see it approaching. And it's precisely in things like this, a 77-year-old Soweto resident saying, I mean, using those words, whatever they were, what tears me apart. This is a man, 77. These things are not properly explained to residents. He deserves that. And he's speaking from the heart. It's actually a horrible thing. So quite right to highlight it.
And why should you pay when you're just going to be punished anyway? This is part of the twisted kind of result that comes from not respecting individuals. The incentives should be aligned so that people do the right thing. You must be rewarded for doing the right thing, not punished for it. And that's sort of the bottom line is that as long as we continue to sort of just treat people as these big interchangeable blocks, I think we're always going to run into problems. And if there was a central sort of idea to kind of the liberal South African tradition, it's that you should treat people as individuals. And herein is a great example of what happens when you don't, which is you just mess around with people's lives who don't deserve it. Also, as it turns out, often the illegally connected guys find ways around these blocks anyway. So they're not even that effective in punishing those who should be punished. Okay. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you found the show interesting. We will be back, of course, tomorrow on the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a wonderful day. Bye-bye. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.